So, in the space of 10 years, even the single most popular name among black baby boys became far less popular. So, parents are plainly getting more diverse with names. But there's another noteworthy shift in these lists, a very quick rate of turnover. Note that four of the 1990 names, James, Robert, David, and Kevin, fell out of the top 10 by 2000. Now, granted, they made up the bottom half of the 1990 list, but the names that replaced them in 2000 were not bottom dwellers. Three of the new names, Isaiah, Jordan, and Elijah, were in fact numbers 1, 2, and 3 in the year 2000. For an even more drastic example of how quickly and thoroughly a name can cycle in and out of use, consider the 10 most popular names given to white girls in California in 1960 and then in the year 2000. All right, the most popular white girl names in 1960: Susan, Lisa, Karen, Mary, Cynthia, Deborah, Linda, Patricia, Deborah, and Sandra. Now, the most popular white girl names in 2000: Emily, Hannah, Madison, Sarah, Samantha, Lauren, Ashley, Emma, Taylor, and Megan. Not a single name from 1960 remains in the top 10. But you say it's hard to stay popular for 40 years. So how about comparing today's most popular names with the top 10 from only 20 years earlier? Now, the most popular white girl names from 1980: Jennifer, Sarah, Melissa, Jessica, Christina, Amanda, Nicole, Michelle, Heather, and Amber. And again, the most popular white girl names in 2000: Emily, Hannah, Madison, Sarah, Samantha, Lauren, Ashley, Emma, Taylor, and Megan. A single holdover from the 1980 list to the 2000 list: Sarah. So where do these Emilys and Emmas and Laurens all come from? Where on earth did Madison come from? It's easy enough to see that new names become very popular very fast, but why? Let's take another look at a pair of earlier lists. Here are the most popular names given to white baby girls in the 1990s among low-income families and among families of middle income or higher. The most common high-end white girl names of the 1990s were Alexandra, Lauren, Catherine, Madison, and Rachel. And the most common low-end white girl names of the 1990s were Amber, Heather, Kayla, Stephanie, and Alyssa. Notice anything? You might want to compare these names with the most popular white girl names list I read earlier, which includes the top 10 overall names from 1980 and 2000. Lauren and Madison, two of the most popular high-end names from the 1990s, made the 2000 top 10 overall list. Amber and Heather, meanwhile, which were two of the overall most popular names from 1980, are now among the low-end names. There is a clear pattern at play. Once a name catches on among high-income, highly educated parents, it starts working its way down the socioeconomic ladder. Amber and Heather started out as high-end names, as did Stephanie and Brittany. For every high-end baby named Stephanie or Brittany, another five lower-income girls received those names within 10 years. So where do lower-end families go name shopping? Many people assume that naming trends are driven by celebrities, but celebrities actually have a weak effect on baby names. As of the year 2000, the pop star Madonna had sold 130 million records worldwide, but hadn't generated even the 10 copycat namings, in California no less, required to make the master index of 4,000 names from which these various lists of girls' names have been drawn. Or, considering all the Britneys you encounter these days, you might think of Britney Spears, but she is in fact a symptom, not a cause, of the Britney explosion. With the most common spelling of the name, Brittany, at number 18 among high-end families and number 5 among low-end families, it is surely approaching its pull date. Decades earlier, Shirley Temple was similarly a symptom of the Shirley boom, though she is often now remembered as its cause. It should also be noted that many girls' names, including Shirley, Carol, Leslie, Hillary, Renee, Stacy, and Tracy, began life as boys' names, but girls' names almost never cross over to boys. So it isn't famous people who drive the name game. It's the family just a few blocks over, the one with the bigger house and newer car. The kind of families that were the first to call their daughters Amber or Heather and are now calling them Lauren or Madison. The kind of families that used to name their sons Justin or Brandon and are now calling them Alexander or Benjamin. Parents are reluctant to poach a name from someone too near, family members or close friends, but many parents, whether they realize it or not, like the sound of names that sound successful. But as a high-end name is adopted en masse, high-end parents begin to abandon it. Eventually, it's considered so common that even lower-end parents may not want it, whereby it falls out of the rotation entirely. The lower-end parents, meanwhile, go looking for the next name that the upper-end parents have broken in. So, the implication is clear. The parents of all those Alexandras, Laurens, Catherines, Madisons, and Rachels should not expect the cachet to last much longer. Those names are already on their way to overexposure. Where, then, will the new high-end names come from? It wouldn't be surprising to find them among the so-called smartest girls' and boys' names in California, cited earlier, that are still fairly obscure. Granted, some of them, Una and Glynis, Florian and Kia, are bound to remain obscure. The same could be surmised of most of the Hebrew names, Rotem and Zophia, Akiva and Zev, even though many of today's most mainstream names, David, Jonathan, Samuel, Benjamin, Rachel, Hannah, Sarah, and Rebecca, are, of course, Hebrew biblical names. Aviva may be the one modern Hebrew name that's ready to break out. It's easy to pronounce, pretty, peppy, and suitably flexible. Drawn from a pair of so-called smart databases, here now is a sampling of today's high-end names. Some of them, as unlikely as it seems, are bound to become tomorrow's mainstream names. Before you scoff, ask yourself this. Do any of them seem more ridiculous than Madison might have seemed 10 years ago? Now, the potential most popular girls' names of the year 2015. Annika, Ansley, Ava, Avery, Aviva, Clementine, Eleanor, Ella, Emma, Fiona, Flannery, Grace, Isabel, Kate, Lara, Lyndon, Maeve, Marie Claire, Maya, Philippa, Phoebe, Quinn, Sophie, and Waverly. And the potential most popular boys' names of the year 2015. Aiden, Aldo, Anderson, Ansel, Asher, Beckett, Bennett, Carter, Cooper, Finnegan, Harper, Jackson, Johan, Keon, Liam, Maximilian, McGregor, Oliver, Reagan, Sander, Sumner, and Will. Obviously, a variety of motives are at work when parents consider a name for their child. They may want something traditional or something bohemian, something unique or something perfectly trendy. It would be an overstatement to suggest that all parents are looking, whether consciously or not, for a so-called smart name or a so-called high-end name, but they are all trying to signal something with a name, whether the name is winner or loser, Madison or Amber, Shatid or Sander, Deshaun or Jake. What the California Names data suggest is that an overwhelming number of parents use a name to signal their own expectations of how successful their children will be. The name isn't likely to make a shard of difference. But the parents can at least feel better knowing that from the very outset, they tried their best. Epilogue. Two paths to Harvard. And now, with all these pages behind us, an early promise has been confirmed. This book indeed has no unifying theme. But if there is no unifying theme to the book Freakonomics, there is at least a common thread running through the everyday application of Freakonomics. It has to do with thinking sensibly about how people behave in the real world, All it requires is a novel way of looking, of discerning, of measuring. This isn't necessarily a difficult task, nor does it require super sophisticated thinking. We have essentially tried to figure out what the typical gang member or sumo wrestler figured out on his own, although we had to do so in reverse. Will the ability to think such thoughts improve your life materially? Probably not. Perhaps you'll put up a sturdy gate around your swimming pool or push your real estate agent to work a little harder. But the net effect is likely to be more subtle than that. You might become more skeptical of the conventional wisdom. You may begin looking for hints as to how things aren't quite what they seem. Perhaps you'll even seek out some trove of data and sift through it, balancing your intelligence and your intuition to arrive at a glimmering new idea. Some of these ideas might make you uncomfortable, even unpopular. To claim that legalized abortion resulted in a massive drop in crime will inevitably lead to explosive moral reactions. But the fact of the matter is that Freakonomics-style thinking simply doesn't traffic in morality. As we suggested near the beginning of this recording, if morality represents an ideal world, then economics represents the actual world. The most likely result of having heard this recording is a simple one. You may find yourself asking a lot of questions. Many of them will lead to nothing, but some will produce answers that are interesting, even surprising. Consider the question posed a couple of chapters ago. How much do parents really matter? The data have by now made it clear that parents matter a great deal in some regards, most of which have been long determined by the time a child is born, and not at all in others. Those are the ones we obsess about. You can't blame parents for trying to do something, anything, to help their child succeed, even if it's something as irrelevant as giving him a high-end first name. But there is also a huge random effect that rains down on even the best parenting efforts. If you are in any way typical, you have known some intelligent and devoted parents whose child went badly off the rails. You may have also known of the opposite instance, where a child succeeds despite his parents' worst intentions and habits. Recall for a moment the two boys, one black and one white, described a couple chapters ago. The white boy, who grew up outside Chicago, had smart, solid, encouraging, loving parents who stressed education and family. The black boy from Daytona Beach was abandoned by his mother, was beaten by his father, and had become a full-fledged gangster by his teens. So what became of the two boys? The second child, now 27 years old, is Roland G. Fryer Jr., the Harvard economist studying black underachievement. The white child also made it to Harvard, but soon after, things went badly for him. His name is Ted Kaczynski.